In Gauteng and the Western Cape, this is Classic Business.
Well, it's time for the concluding SME panel for this week, brought to you by Yellow Pages. And so far this week, we've heard from the likes of Lumkile Mondi and the Small Business Institute just how much we don't know about the SME ecosystem, as the SBI launched its research report into how much we can actually define when it comes to SMEs. We're flying in the dark when it comes to understanding the SME sector, but hopefully as this report expands its scope, we'll know a whole lot more. For example, we used to bandy the figure about of between 5 and 6 million SMEs in the country. It's closer to, according to the official SARS and Treasury data, to 250,000, so quite a lot smaller. And we heard from Alon Reyes of Reyes Corp too about how to do enterprise and supply development right, the importance of investing in startups and really creating and developing opportunities to enable emerging small businesses to enter big business value chains. And last night and tonight is all about celebrating the entrepreneurs, the risk takers, the jockeys, the mavericks, those who swim against the stream. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Mohammed Simji of A2D24.com. I hope I got that right, Mohammed. Welcome
to
the show.
Thanks for having us.
And also in studio, we've got Terence Naidu of Envision It. Terence, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Michael.
And then the two on the line tonight are Pravashan Naidu of E-Waste Africa. Pravashan, evening.
Hi, Michael. Yes, I am. And looking forward to the next half an hour.
Fantastic. And you're all joined by Gugu Mjadu, spokesperson for the Entrepreneur of the Year. And Gugu, that's why these three gentlemen are on the panel, because they're finalists in this year's 2018 Entrepreneur of the Year competition, which is sponsored by Salam and Business Partners. So great to have you on the show. Sounds like we don't have Gugu tonight. Well, that's fine. We'll then just roll straight on to why we're here tonight, and that's to celebrate the entrepreneurs. Mohammed, you founded A2D24, this digital consulting and implementation company, back in June of 2015, at a time when, let's face it, confidence in the South African economy must have been at an all-time low. But you discovered a gap in the tech market for low-cost, innovative solutions which can be readily available and rolled out at a fraction of the cost of the usual operating models of big business. And we'll go into some of those in due course. But what triggered that discovery, and what led you to get into business at a time when most businesses were, let's face it, just cutting costs and battening down the hatches?
I mean, to be honest, in my previous role as a consultant, I was helping my clients do contract negotiation. And what I was finding is they were literally paying 500 million rand for systems that I thought were worth, you know, 5 to 10 million rand. And I said, wow, this is, you know, something is definitely wrong in the market. The price point that, you know, customers are paying versus what it actually takes to build these systems is completely different. Personally, I took the leap because at that time in my life, my wife and I had saved up about 2 years worth of cash, and we really felt that this was the opportune moment in our careers to take this and try it. And yeah, so far, so good.
And let's face it, that really defines the entrepreneur from the individual who will continue to stay in employment, is the ability to take that leap of faith, but it's not leaping blind. What sort of market research and bootstrapping did you do before you decided to jump in?
I chatted to a lot of people who were potential clients, and I said, if this were an opportunity, you know, how much would you pay for this? And really kind of, you know, interviewed as many people in my network as I could to really understand what was the potential for the market. But, you know, ultimately, I think to really find it, you actually have to make the leap. And then, you know, it's actually when the rubber hits the road that you can actually prove that market research. And that's what we did, is we literally, in our first 6 months, tried to line up as many potential clients as we could. I can't tell you how many proposals I wrote in those first 6 months. And it's about you going through that cycle. But what I have learned is that, you know, building one client helps to build another client and helps to build another. So there's something about momentum.
Momentum and that snowball effect cannot be discounted yet. So what is it you do exactly? It all started with the Raspberry Pi.
What we do is we love talking to clients and understanding what their problems are. And we believe that in 2018, there is no problem that doesn't need tech to solve it. And so we get a lot of excitement out of thinking through problems, helping to solve them, and then searching the world for literally the world's best tech to help solve that problem. And we get amazing satisfaction when we see this happen, and when we're actually able to go back a year later and see something that we've built. I think it's this builder effect. It's the feeling of coming up with an idea and then actually seeing it somewhere, seeing it in action.
And the fact that we now have the tools at our disposal to be able to build these things almost in our garages and scale. And I don't think we quite realize what a huge transformational impact that's going to have on SMEs.
I can't agree with you more. Things that, you know, 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, were literally impossible to do, now are done in minutes, you know, if not seconds. And the information that's available out there, if you have the time and the energy to research it, read it, learn a new tech and find a client to build it for. I mean, it's an amazing journey to go on, but the amount of information and the tools that are available, I mean, we literally struggle ourselves to keep up with it.
Now, I see here that you've developed a predictive churn model for a mobile network service provider in Cameroon, amongst other things. What are some of the more innovative applications that you've developed over the last 3 years?
Sure. I mean, the work that I'm most excited about really is our work in healthcare, and we believe in it because of the potential to have impact on so many people's lives. I think for me, the ones that resonate with me is we, about just over a year ago, we built a system to help improve the process of dispatching pharmaceuticals to public sector hospitals in South Africa. And today, that system processes something like 4,000 medication orders a day. And it does it in a, you know, literally the day we got there, they used dot matrix printouts to place these orders. And it's amazing to go back and see all the, it's literally every single medication that goes to a hospital today runs through an app that we built called MSD Online. And it, for me, it's amazing satisfaction to have gone, seen a manual process, seen all these pieces of paper, come up with an idea, build it, deploy it, and now actually see it in action and see the impact that it has. It's amazing satisfaction for myself and for the team.
And I can understand exactly why. Gugu Mjadu is here in person, so obviously just delayed a little in
just
the notorious traffic around Melrose Arch. Gugu, great to see you again.
Thank you so much for having us, Michael. It's exciting. It's exciting, as you can see for yourself and can hear. It's confusing. Once you read their stories, you meet them, it's so confusing.
Well, you know what I love about the stories of finalists this year is for me, is an impact, a theme of impact, that a golden thread. And Terence has a golden pocket handkerchief in as well, so I don't know if that was by design. But there is a golden thread of impact. Gugu, what did you like about Mohammed's story? What made him stand out as a finalist?
I think what he's talking about, the impact of the work that he's doing, but also as a country, we don't focus on technology. And it's something that's going to help our country to grow. If you think about it, most countries that develop, or at least in the East especially, it's technology-driven, like countries, innovation-driven countries. And we need to get there as a country. And unfortunately, it's not something that we necessarily focus on. So it would be very important going forward to actually celebrate people like Mohammed and say what you're doing is great, and how can we get more people like you to go into business as well.
And that's why we want to find out exactly how they did it. Terence, you established Envisionit Stock Lending Solutions in 2014. It's a JV between Envisionit Capital Solutions and Sunlum, and it became the first black-owned and managed securities lending business in Africa. And obviously, that is some going in a market that is very much dependent on relationships and networks that take years and years to develop. How did you break into that market?
Well, I started off my life in financial services at South Africa's longest running hedge fund, Peregrine Capital. And, you know, my mom said something to me growing up, which stays with me forever. It takes you years to build up your name, and you can throw it away in a minute or in a heartbeat. And, you know, it's words to live by. And you know, I built my own personal brand and reputation through those years. And we had the JV with Sunlum, partly because I worked there before I left. And it's testament to the fact that you never burn your bridges, and it's about building your reputation, your integrity, and sticking by it. So when I left Sanlam, Sanlam said, you know, would you like to partner with us and create this? And it's an industry dominated by the big banks. You need a large amount of capital or balance sheet, which we didn't have, and Sanlam was the perfect partner for that. So, you know, we're super grateful to Sanlam for backing us. But creating that reputation and of integrity, entrepreneurship, innovation, Sanlam saw something and decided, okay, these are the guys we want to back. So it was great, being the first black owned and black managed. We can't forget that point. It's not just
it's not just fancy structuring.
It's not just fancy structuring. We live by the fact that, we're focused on empowerment and the like, and it's black managed and operated at the same time. So we knew we had to be the best at what we do. We had to innovate. If it works, we needed to fix it.
Do you find that comes with almost added pressure?
Without a doubt. All eyes are on us. We can't afford to screw it up. But I think we work well under pressure. And 4 years later, we're forced to be reckoned with in the industry.
It's the reason pressure reveals diamonds. And
absolutely.
It is a pressure cooker environment naturally in financial services.
Yeah.
You came out of the hedge fund space, which, let's face it, has gone through a bit of a crisis over the last few years. But an emerging area is private equity. And we see a lot of this question on how we grow new emerging private equity general partners when you need to seed a first fund, but you don't have a track record under your belt. And very often you need a sponsor. And if you look at how Medu Capital started out of Brait 15 years ago, a lot of these top black-owned managed funds in the private equity space at least had that sponsor that believed in them in the beginning. So Sanlam's role, very important here. There are no conflicts, because I know Sanlam sponsors this particular competition.
No conflicts whatsoever. Sanlam's not a shareholder in the business anymore. It's worthy to note that we started the business in 2010. Sanlam only came on board as a shareholder in one area of one business that we manage as a group in 2014, and we bought Sanlam out in 2016. So true empowerment, I believe, is you have the incumbent help you up, but at some point you got to cut the cord and stand on your own two feet, and the baby's got to grow up. So we've grown up, and we're doing some very cool stuff. So not just in securities lending, we've created an online escrow platform to de-risk any business transaction you want to do in the country. And the reason and the motive behind that was we want to grow the economy. We started that when South Africa went into a technical recession, and we figured, how do we get involved to grow the economy? And the reason why people don't do business is because they don't trust each other. Escrow takes that trust element away. So we're using technology from that perspective. We also created an online borrowing platform for securities lending business. But a point I want to make is that, Jeremy, and if I, hopefully I quote him correctly again, Jeremy mentioned that, things aren't the way they used to be. We don't measure companies by the number of employees that they have anymore. And never a true word spoken about Envision at Capital. We've got 12 employees. But for us, it's not just about your market cap and your revenue. It's about your social impact. We've got 12 employees, but we've developed 10 graduates, and we've got 27 students that we're funding through tertiary education right now. And we've got 500 kids on an online maths and reading program at a school in Mamelodi. And you'd like this with your interest in SA Water and the Food Forum. We've just launched this week the Envision It Prize, where we're awarding R1 million in prizes to grade 9 and 10 students from public schools that come up with the best water harvesting idea. Now, we come from an industry that's characterized by greed and leverage and the like, but we thought, how could we change the narrative and put that into something socially responsible? So the Envision It Prize, you basically solve an issue that the country has, you get the youth involved, and you nurture and you encourage innovation, entrepreneurship, and with it, job creation. That's positive gearing. So, you know, we like to take the same mindset and put it into a very social responsible implement it in a very socially responsible manner.
Well, Terence, if only we could replicate the DNA of that thinking and splice it into almost every business, no matter how large or how small in South Africa, the scalable impact that we could have. We saw from the jobs number this week that we do have a youth unemployment crisis in particular. I do think a large chunk of that is a base of the pyramid problem that stems from education.
Yeah.
And no pun on STEM there, but we do need to focus on science, technology, engineering, and math skills. And we could really be a whole lot more innovative with the way we try and address those issues, because we throw a lot of money at the education problem.
You know, government's been fantastic in inputs, and you can't fault government for their initiatives to put money into certain challenges that we have. But I think we need to change that, and we need to be more output driven. And that's exactly what we do. It's not about how much money we put in, it's about getting the biggest bang for our buck. And you know, that's exactly what we're doing with the prize. We're a company of 12 people, 27 students currently studying, 10 graduates. Can you imagine one of the big banks with, you know, 10,000 people? If they did the same two times, you'll have 20,000 students that they'd fund. So I think, you know, we're trying to change the narrative of investment banking. Yes, it may be characterized by greed, but not all of us are.
it's not all like billions on TV.
Terence,
you know what? The narrative is changing as well because of individuals that are coming in with a different mindset from a different generation, I think, as well.
Yeah.
There is a thread in this as well, that there's a purpose-driven element to our venturing and our entrepreneuring. A lot more social entrepreneurs that I'm interviewing on the show over the last few years. There's a definite rise of social entrepreneurship.
Without a doubt. Mind you, I think I'm the old man in this trio. So
you don't look it, though.
we'll be taking pictures before the bromance goes too far to settle that on Twitter. But good to bring you in here before I chat to Pravashan. Obviously, there's a lot to like about Terence and what he's done, and his reputation does precede him. But for this competition, what did you really like about Terence that made him a finalist?
It is very important for businesses to be responsible. And I think that talks to us. But also, we always celebrate first this, first that. And for us, a business in the financial services sector is very important for transformation in South Africa. So it's something that we did look into and appreciated from Terence's business. But also, as I suppose, the passion that each of the entrepreneurs display when we interview them, when we interact with them, and how you can hear it even now. There's so much that young people can learn from Terence, the graduates that are in his program. It's very important that they would pick up the same work ethic that he applied in his life, because obviously it's something that has empowered him to start his business as well.
We get them to pay it forward.
Well,
not pay back to us. They've got to pay it forward. So you get that multiplier effect. And again, that gearing and leverage effect, whether it's in business, you know, to drive profits, and the more profits we make, the more we've got to give back. You know, I think it stems from a love for the country. You know, I grew up in apartheid South Africa, lived in an all-Indian area, went to an all-Indian school, met my first non-white Indian friend probably way after school. But you acknowledge that you've got to be the change you want to see in the country.
Mm.
You've got to take the initiative. You know, under apartheid, if we didn't have such amazing leaders like we did who stood up, we couldn't wait for the government to change it, right? We needed to stand up, and we need to do the same thing now with innovation. We need to make innovation sexy and get our youth into it.
Terence, isn't that something we need to inculcate, a DIY culture? I think, unfortunately, there was so much that needed to be done to to promise to the masses just basics like running water and electrification and homes, but it's run ahead of ourselves now that we almost have a sense of, well, the government will solve all of our problems. And really, it is up to each and every one of us, as you say.
Without a doubt. You know, there's only so much that governments can do. And let's face it, you know, in their nature, governments aren't the most efficient. So, you know, if you have the will, if you have the drive, if you have the passion for the country that we do, and you want to see the difference, you got to stand up and be counted. Tuma Mina.
Pravashan, on that note, you had a literal light bulb moment for reducing South Africa's toxic waste. Tell me a little bit more about how that came to be.
You know, Michael, just listening both to Terrence and Mohammed, it's amazing what people are doing out there. So what we do, we are an environmentally ethical, legally compliant light bulb recycling solution. It's about the touch, the feel, creating something that we as South Africans can be part of and we as Africans can be part of. We were the first in Africa to be able to actually have the ability to recycle a bulb with a reuse of all of the byproducts. We're busy working on a generational first in terms of a rare earth recovery plant. So in terms of what we do, it's been created out of a love for job creation. I think the pure benefit has been the fact that we've been able to save the environment. And to date, we've actually just saved over 800,000 kgs worth of hazardous waste from entering our landfill sites, and that's been in under 4 years. So Terrence's multiplier effect, I love it, because being able to be on a platform like Classic FM, it's almost a shout out to everybody out there to say, let's support the entrepreneurs and support the SMEs, because we are the ones that are going to be able to create the jobs to take South Africa to the next level. We can always sit back and complain about government not doing this or that. I think government works within a mandate and they have to do what they have to do. We are the ones that have to make the difference.
Tuma Mina, indeed, all over the panel tonight. So here's a not a curveball question. It's a fairly obvious question considering the headlines of this week around amending Section 25 of the Constitution and business being afraid of what might happen to the sanctity of property rights, the political and policy uncertainty we seem to be faced with on a constant basis. How do you as entrepreneurs deal with that on a daily basis and plan and make decisions? Do you just put that to one side and say, well, that is the political noise and the reality of South Africa circa 2018 and just get on with it, Mohammed?
Sure. My personal philosophy on it is to try and focus on elements that I can control. So items that are in my control, I can put effort into, I can invest my time and energy into it. And that's really my, you know, my personal philosophy. And I think that filters through into the business and how we go about solving challenges. If something is we see a challenge, something that we can control, we put our energy into addressing it.
Terrence?
You know, we share a similar belief as Mohammed. There's only two things in life you can control: how you act and how you react. So, you know, when government decides that this is going to be the new policy, we choose how we're going to act and react. When government said that there's going to be free education, we knew that government didn't have enough money to fund free education. So from our bursary program, we said, okay, we're going to act in this way. We're going to carry on doing what we're doing. And that's just how, you know, we live our lives and how we the businesses run as well.
Pravashan?
You know, Michael, it's actually about being ahead of stuff. So as much as government will release a policy, it's so important that we as the stakeholders are involved in every part of the decision-making process. So government doesn't necessarily have the expertise that we could create in an individual spectrum of an activity. Recycling light bulbs is such a unique activity that you have to be involved with government guiding, and then guide you back. And that's the only way we can work together to actually be able to make that change in South Africa. So it's not government first, anybody else. It's about us leading the way, finding the way to have good conversation, good intellectual discussions about how do we put this together and how do we grow together. And as per my earlier statement, that's the only way we're going to grow the economy, is taking entrepreneurs like ourselves, multiplying them, finding ways around legislation and being able to get customers or consumers to buy your product, service providers to use your product, government to buy into your concept or into what you perceive as 2022's vision, 2032's vision, and then driving it as one force and one unified force to be able to improve South Africa, especially from a job creation aspect.
And Gugu, just to wrap this up, I think you can be quite proud of the class of 2018. Been covering the competition for several years now, and it's rare that you get a collection of entrepreneurs who are not only innovators and experts in their field and growing their businesses profitably, but looking at ways to do that and in a way that really benefits South Africa in a form of conscious capitalism as well. So well done on that. Thanks for tuning in to Classic Business, brought to you by Yellow Pages. Remember, you can download their all-new app now to get your business discovered. Yellow Pages. Don't search, find.